You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. Up above the world so high, like a diamond in the sky. When the blazing sun is gone, when the nothing shines upon.
I put a spell on you, and now you're mine. I put a spell on you, and now you're mine. So, everyone knows that song, of course, from like Hocus Pocus, the greatest Halloween film ever made. Right, John?
Okay, I was
Did
honestly,
I cast my spell
when
on you
started, I was so confused and entranced by just, he had these swift body
I was
motions.
Gyrating, man.
Yes.
I was, I'm all body.
Power of Christ compelled you just then.
It did. He was all body. He was all up and down me.
But yeah, I eventually understood what you were doing. I was like, oh, okay, that's from Hocus Pocus.
Thank you.
You never give me warning, really, about how we're going into these episodes.
I like to leave you in suspense. Like a horror movie. I like to leave you in suspense like a horror film. And, welcome, everyone, to our Halloween episode of We Are Error.
What I love about it is number 13.
It is number 13. Perfect, right?
Yeah, perfect.
I mean, it is, yes, absolutely. But yeah, of course, I am Christopher Herman. I'm joined by John Romo.
Yeah, boy.
And we're here. Yes, you are, sir. And we're here to talk about all kinds of video game news and nonsense and horror games. But first, we're going to get right into the video game news, starting off like we usually do at the end of the month. The NPD released their best-selling games of September 2016. The first four games on this list are stupid sports titles, and I will not mention them. So number five is BioShock the Collection.
Whoa, it is all actually stupid sports games.
It is. Number six is Destiny the Collection. Number seven is Grand Theft Auto 5,
get
of course.
Out.
Overwatch is number eight. Number nine is Forza Horizon 3, and number 10 is Call of Duty Black Ops 3. And for those who care, number one was NBA 2K17, number two was Madden NFL 17, number three was FIFA 17, and four was NHL 17.
I think it is very interesting a little bit because... No, it's not.
It's
the
pretty,
basketball season
average.
Did start this week, though.
Oh, so, did it? Is that what happens? They're playing the sports, the orange one?
Season.
So with the orange ball, right? With the lines on
it?
Yeah,
the one from Flubber.
Flubber, I remember that movie. Not a good movie, but I remember that scene.
I remember it being fun as a little kid.
It was something.
Where Robin Williams, R.I.P., has that sexual relationship with his robot.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, so
going
weird.
Back and watching that, that's even weirder.
That robot
now.
Wants to fuck him.
Yes, it does. Man, Flubber. Did not expect that. I think they made a sequel to Flubber. I believe there's a Flubber 2. It does not star Robin Williams, though, unless it stars his corpse, which I don't think it does.
I'd rather not talk
No, not at all. But, I mean, the sports titles, I mean, that's expected, of course. You know, all these big NBA, Madden, FIFAs, your hockeys, your whatever.
And NBA is a huge game.
It was
featured in the NBA, or in the Nintendo Switch promotional trailer.
Yeah,
so.
Well, we'll see. That's actually what, if it'll actually be on that.
Be playable.
Maybe. But the one that just stands out to me is number five, the BioShock Collection. I was kind of impressed by that. I mean, of course, the BioShock Collection collects the original BioShock, BioShock 2, and BioShock Infinite. Really, it's basically a super HD re-release of all those three games. I mean, I'm happy to see it there. Clearly, there's continued interest in that franchise. I mean, John, what stands out to you like among this list?
That Destiny the Collection, actually.
No, that's the other collection. That's right.
I've actually been very interested in it.
You're getting the Destiny hankering?
You want to know what? I bought Destiny, actually, on the Xbox One when it was like $20. Vanilla Destiny.
Mm.
Never opened it.
Yeah, missing much.
And just sold it back. Then my friends, I heard some of my friends on PS4 are playing, and I was like, I want to jump in.
Yeah.
But then also, I don't got the time to jump in.
That's an investment.
I'm getting Battlefield soon, so like, I ain't got it.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm probably going to get Battlefield as well. And there's some other games that I'm going to play. I think that maybe we should review because they're really super cheap and we would have time to play them, hopefully.
What are you talking about?
Outlast, I think. I think that would be
I am getting that.
That. Same
I
time.
Am getting that.
It's like $6 on Xbox Live and I assume it's $6 on other platforms.
Oh, no,
it's
remember I told you the PS4 sale's going on. It's like $3.
Four? Oh, there you go. Okay,
I think for $6 I get that and Whistleblower.
Right. Same. I think it's same on
okay,
the
cool,
Xbox.
Cool.
So, I mean, that sounds great. But moving on from that, Nintendo Switch will be the first home console since the Nintendo 64 to use cartridges, but it won't support physical media from the company's current console and handheld platform. It answers the question.
Doing a good job there, Mr. Nintendo.
I'll be fair. The PS4 and the Xbox One didn't initially launch at that. They had these. They had the what? The PS.
Oh, but they have. You know, they also have strong online Xbox platforms, and I trust that you know they will deliver in some sense.
I'm playing devil's advocate. A Nintendo representative confirmed to Polygon today that the Nintendo Switch will not be compatible with Nintendo 3DS cartridges or Wii U disc. It does not appear from our limited glimpse of the hardware so far that either the Switch console or its dock includes a disc drive at all, although Nintendo has not commented on that. When asked if the Nintendo Switch will support downloadable games, whether they're Switch games or titles released on previous systems like the 3DS, the representative told Polygon that Nintendo isn't discussing specifics on that front. For the time being, Nintendo fans can hold out hope that they'll be able to play downloadable Wii U and 3DS games on the Switch. The cartridges for the Switch, which are known as game cards, appear to be similar in size to 3DS cartridges, but Nintendo also declined to give details on how the Switch titles will be distributed. And did not comment on whether the system uses SD cards for games. A Nintendo 3DS cartridge is reported to go to up to 8 gigabytes in capacity, but of course 3DS games run at a much lower resolution than the high-resolution screen of the Nintendo Switch. NBA 2K17, which was featured in the console's reveal trailer, weighs in at well over 40 gigabytes on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. The PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 versions are both under 8 gigabytes.
Fuck.
Flash memory is getting cheaper every year, though, so the Nintendo Switch could use game cards of 16 gigabytes or perhaps even 32 gigabytes storage.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we'll just have to wait for the company to reveal technical specifications, which Nintendo says it will do sometime before launching the system in March 2017. I think earlier today, Nintendo actually announced that they will reveal the specifications for the console in January. So rumors that we've heard before appear to be true, especially in regards to some of the memory for a lot of these games and the resolution these games will probably run at.
What makes me curious and also furious?
Yeah. Ooh, that rhymed.
Yeah. Is why can't you just answer some of these questions? It seems very odd.
Because they're scared. Because they know that they've under-delivered in hardware for the past... I mean, really, we can go all the way back to the N64, but let's keep it more recent, the last decade with the Wii, and even though the Wii was a commercial success. But the Wii U just underperformed so dramatically that it, like, we got a... They're scared. That's the thing is.
Hey, really, what was the last good Nintendo console? Like, really good?
I mean, I have fond memories of the GameCube. It was weird... But it had, I mean, that's the thing, it has, like, great games, and I wasn't a fan of the controller.
See, I think that's
so
it.
I think it's the SNES, honestly. I think it's the SNES. Yeah. That was the last good Nintendo.
Although I do think it's funny console. That I think once, it's just so weird to think the GameCube out of the last four is probably the best.
Yeah, it's probably the best.
It's so weird, though. Yeah. So weird to think that, because mm-hmm. I never really paid it much mind.
It's definitely, it's sold, I mean, that's kind of a weird thing. Like, every Nintendo console that had been released for, the past 30 years has always sold less than its predecessor. So, like, GameCube sold less than N64. Wii is the only anomaly in that. Mm-hmm. And I think the GameCube, I think, only sold, like, 20-plus million units worldwide, which is actually relatively low.
Was it third place that generation?
Oh, yeah. I think even the Xbox outpaced it, which was saying something, because that...
Was it entry-level?
It was an entry-level console, which, you know, I mean, that showed the kind of the... What Microsoft wanted to do with console hardware. But, yeah, some of this news is pretty disappointing. Again, I would not be surprised if this thing is as powerful as an Xbox 360 or a PS3. You know, just on what we've seen. Where the Wii U was definitely not as powerful as the Xbox 360 or the PS3. And the fact that this would be, it keeps up with the tradition of Nintendo just being so behind in terms of power for their consoles.
Yeah.
And I hate I'm tired of it, guys. Nintendo fans, look, I used to be one of you. I used to be very passionate. But stop saying that Zelda and Mario don't need to be, you know, as beautiful as, like, Uncharted. Like, but why couldn't they be?
Yeah, why? Imagine, I really would love to see super resed up Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah.
That would be beautiful.
It would be great.
And why can't you? Like, what does it hurt to be on par with your competitors?
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. And also, just please confirm that people will be able to download their Wii U or 3DS titles onto this console.
Nintendo's, but they've shown that they don't do that.
They're gonna make us rebuy.
Yeah, that's what they've done for 25 years. How many people played Mario 3 on every other, you know, Nintendo console? You know,
they suck.
Yeah, It's frustrating, and I mean they'll have to answer these questions sooner rather than later. I think January is too late. You know, I think they should definitely start answering these questions in November. That's just me, but we'll see. Now, not to be too negative on Nintendo, we got some happy Nintendo news. The Pokemon Company has released a new trailer for Pokemon Sun and Moon, revealing several new details about its upcoming pair of 3DS games, including the final evolutions for the three starting Pokemon. Decadude in the Serena Roar.
You said duty.
Yeah, duty. And Primarina are the final evolutions of Grass-type Rowlet. I can say these. Fire-type Litten and Water-type Popolio. Polio. I'm going to call him Polio. He's got the rickets, respectively. While the evolutions were leaked via the Pokemon Sun and Moon demo earlier this month, we now have official names and typings for each, with Decadude being Grass and Ghost. That's kind of cool.
Decadude.
Decadude. Incineroar, Fire and Dark, and Primarina, Water and Fairy. For more on each, you can also check out their second evolutions, which I think were released previously a number of weeks ago. The new trailer also reveals the three remaining guardian deities that protect the Alola region and join the previously revealed Tapu Koko, who watches over Milamila Island. Tapu Lila is a psychic and fairy-type guardian of the Akala Islands. Tapu Bulu is grass and fairy-type guardian of Ula Ula Island. And Tapu Fini is the water and fairy-type guardian of Pony Island. A couple of other new Pokemon were officially revealed as well, including new psychic Pokemon called Cosmog and the Alolan form of Persian. Finally, the trailer also reveals that players will be able to witness the beginning of the Alolan Pokemon League in Sun and Moon, as well as battle with and against a number of famous trainers from the prior Pokemon games, including Cynthia from Diamond/Pearl/Platinum. Who gives a fuck about Cynthia? I certainly don't. And Red and Blue from the first generation of games, which is really, really exciting. And I love
what is Cynthia mentioned.
Yeah, who cares? No one knows Cynthia. I'm OG. I'm Generation 1 and 2, goddammit. I don't care about any of that Generation 3 or whatever crap.
I don't even remember Pokemon Platinum.
It's been a while. But what I liked in the trailer is that they actually show your character meeting Red and Blue. And, like, Blue, who basically is, yeah, he's your rival from Pokemon Red and Blue. And, like, he's talking, and then, like, Blue says, "Oh, what do you think, Red?" And Red is just silent. Silent as ever! Hey, old buddy! It's like, that's funny. That's both the Pokemon franchise and I think Nintendo poking fun at themselves, which I actually really appreciated. And for me, I actually, you know what, I think even though these games look really fucking weird, I might check this out. I might buy another 3DS games before that thing becomes extinct when the Switch is released.
See, that's what I wonder. Is the 3DS going to become extinct?
I think so. I think it's going to be phased out in the number, like, next 2 years.
So Nintendo is just one thing now.
I think so. It makes sense. It makes sense because people to buy this thing. But in regards to, you know, not keep criticizing the Switch because we can do that forever. But like what you've kind of heard from this and seen, I mean, there's some fun stuff here, I think.
When's this game come out?
November. I think it's the first 2 weeks of November, I want to say. It's definitely November, which is a big month to begin with in the video game industry.
You know, when it comes to Pokemon news, I'll say what I've been saying since the beginning.
Yeah.
Let's stop talking about it. But damn, Litten is cool. I just love that name, Litten. Because he's a kitten, but he lit.
I get it. I get it.
It's so good. Lit. It's one of those instances where it's like the universe just like comes together. You have to think about everything that has to happen, that like kittens are adorable, and that like fire is a thing, and also lit means fire, and lit can perfectly fit in a kitten, and like lit is a cool millennial term for things that are hot, but like hot, not temperature.
Nintendo loves those millennials.
Yeah, I know. It's just
rooftop parties.
I just love it.
It is my favorite. I mean, my favorite starters is Rowlet because it's clearly a ripoff of like this 1930s Warner Bros. Cartoon. This little singing owl is like, "I'm gonna talk about the singer and the spina," and it's like this whole like 1930s like
singer. I'm gonna sing it. Yeah, wag my finger.
Yeah, I love it. It's like I just want him to do that. So I think this was fun, and to be a little more positive about Nintendo, I'm glad that we kind of like mentioned this.
I really love that we mentioned it because since I got to sing that song, that is definitely going to be the in between music.
Well worth it. Fantastic. Cannot wait. Let's do that in the beginning, not do that in between the horror parts.
Right, okay.
That'd be fucking weird. Well, that might be horrifying to some people. some news that I'm not particularly happy about. A movie based on the popular PlayStation exclusive Uncharted franchise just found its director in Sean Levy, who previously had directed some episodes of Stranger Things and also Night at the Museum. This isn't his first brush of video game-inspired movies, as Mojang previously rejected his plans for a Goonies-esque Minecraft movie.
That actually sounds interesting.
Actually, that does sound interesting. While Levy hasn't necessarily directed all of the Stranger Things episode, he's certainly been busy. He's also produced Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner's upcoming sci-fi and horror film Arrival, which I've based on all the critics in Austin are saying like it's the second coming of sci-fi films.
Really?
Yeah, people, I mean, you gotta take it with a grain of salt, you know. But people are being very positive about it, at least so far. Things have been rocky from the start for the Uncharted movie. Shooting was supposed to start in early 2015, but that was with another director, Seth Gordon, who ended up leaving the project and never came to fruition. The same happened with his original writer, Joe Carnahan, Smokin' Aces, the A-Team. You gotta give those guys those two films. I mean, come on, the guy, The Gray, you could give him that. All right, whatever.
The
Gray is good. Who left work on Sony's Bad Boys for Life with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. Well, maybe he made a decision. maybe not. I mean, I don't know. That's not good. Naughty Dog's Uncharted series just wrapped up early this year, or at least the Nathan Drake's games did the release of Uncharted 4: A Thief's End. John, do you still care about the Uncharted movie, or did you ever care?
No, because Uncharted is a movie.
Yeah, pretty
much. The games are basically a movie, but better, because I get to play them.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean,
No one can embody Nathan Drake, I don't think.
No, I don't want it. Nolan North is Nathan Drake.
Yeah, let's keep it that way.
I'm tired of this. Stop. Just kill it. Let it die. You know, you're never going to reach the quality of the writing or the action or the characters of those games with your adaptation of them in the film. Sorry.
Also, I must say, I can't really get into Stranger Things.
Like, really?
As much as most people are, it's kind of like, I get what it's doing.
Yeah.
But I've seen better. It's one of those instances, and I mean, maybe I've said this on mic before, but it's like one of those instances where I don't really get the Game of Thrones hype either, because it's sort of this thing where, like, I've fought dragons in games before. So are you guys just realizing that this shit is cool? Because I thought this shit was cool.
I mean, everyone thought
dragons. Like, 20 years. Well, like, the things that kids in high school would get picked on 20 years ago are now cool. So
no,
to me,
true.
So to me, Frappuccino latte sipping sorority girl comes up to me and goes, did you watch the recent Stranger Things? It's so cool. It's like, yeah, so was synth music back in the 80s. Get the fuck out my face.
Yeah,
like,
remember John Carpenter?
Gosh.
John Carpenter, if he had the career, like, if he had his career, like, existed today, he'd be, like, one of the most popular directors, like, of the modern age, you know? Like, right now, like, in the last 10 years. Except, like, it's funny because all of, like, his stuff came out in, like, 80s and 70s, and they all, like, bombed commercially. Now they're considered to be, like, some of the greatest, like, genre horror films. So it's like, fuck. Like, the things that were popular back then are now popular now. It's crazy.
Also, that's not like a stab at latte sipping.
Oh, okay.
Sorority
of course,
because
yeah,
I've dated a latte sipping.
Oh, sorority. Okay.
She was cool. She just didn't understand cool things.
Okay, fair enough. Speaking of things that are not cool, or a particular person who is not cool, Uwe Boll has retired. There was a time when German-born director Uwe Boll and video game movies were synonymous. Boll was infamously attached to the notion that you couldn't turn a video game into a good movie. House of the Dead, Alone in the Dark, Blood Rain, Name of the King, the list of video games turned into theatrical tripe by Boll goes on and on. So apparently, Boll has recently released a statement saying that the market is dead. He said, you don't make any money anymore on movies because the DVD and Blu-ray market worldwide has dropped 80% in the last 3 years. That is the real reason I cannot afford to make movies. I can't go back to student filmmaking because I have made so many movies in my life, and I can't make cheaper and cheaper movies at my age. It's a shame. I would be happy to make movies, but it's just not financially profitable. Boll went on to say that he hasn't been using the money he made on stupid video game-based movies to pay for his passion projects like Attack on Darfur and Assault on Wall Street, both of which were also critically panned. First of all, John, do you care that Uwe Boll is even alive? I shouldn't say that. I just say, do we care that he's retiring?
Yes.
Yes.
I think it's important because, like you stated, his name became synonymous with this fact that video game movies could not work.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not that. It's just that he should not work.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, he's a terrible, terrible filmmaker.
And I've seen interviews with him where he rejects that so strongly. Like, it's sort of to the point where it's delusion, where he thinks he's actually making great...
He thinks he's an auteur.
It's almost a Tommy Wiseau The Room sort of situation, where... maybe he just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
That it's bad. Eventually, I think Tommy Wiseau got it.
I think he eventually did.
But Uwe just has not understood that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he ridicules the people who have funded his career and, like, literally get the fuck out of here. What is that? Like, he needs to recognize... He's not a good... He doesn't seem like a good guy. And I think that's why it's kind of hard to feel saddened by this retirement news at all.
I'm happy he's gone. He's, from what I've seen in interviews and just like his rants on YouTube, which I don't know if you've ever seen, they're ridiculous. He comes off like a huge prick. And so the film industry is better off without him. The video game industry is better off without him. I mean, look, personally, do what you want, but you come on, be a better human being. Concentrate on that.
It's when I think of bad things about video games, I do think Uwe Boll, Jack Thompson, and all that kind of stuff.
He's definitely up there. Moving on to something I know you're super excited for. Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix and 2.5 Remix are headed to PlayStation 4 in the form of a remastered compilation that bundles together all six adventures on a single disc. Square Enix and Disney shared the news at Paris Games Week. Announcing that the collection will release for PS4 on March 28th, 2017. 2 months after the launch of Kingdom Hearts HD, Roman numeral 2.8, Final Chapter Prologue, which was recently delayed to January. The compilation, which is now available for pre-order on Amazon, features all six adventures found in Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 Remix. They already said that! So these are the games that are included in the collection. I'm going to read them because they're ridiculous. Kingdom Hearts Final Mix, Kingdom Hearts RE: Chain of Memories, Kingdom Hearts 358 divided by 2 days.
Over 2 days.
Okay, sure. Kingdom Hearts 2 Final Mix, all right. Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep Final Mix, and Kingdom Hearts RE: Coded. So, there you go. John, why are you happy? Because you're the Kingdom Hearts fan?
Okay, so a little background on this whole situation.
Mm.
The way this podcast has worked is Chris has always done the news thing, and I've always kind of like kicked off ideas for our second half.
Yeah.
This is the first time I have sent Chris news and go, please, please can we bring this up? I got so excited.
I had it on there. It was on there because I didn't want to talk about it.
But like, I was like, I saw it and I was like, no way. This is exactly what I had asked for a couple days ago when we had talked.
Yeah, one of our original shows.
About 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue was like, I do want to play that, but also it's been so long that I want to start from the beginning and go through the franchise sequentially and kind of chronologically because each game has been released sort of out of order, which, you know, I'm just going to tell you right now, that could be a game topic, main topic.
So everything, like, from Japan in the last 20 years.
just games put out of context. So the Metal Gear franchise as well. Castlevania.
Oh, yeah, we can get
that. Timelines. Gaming timelines.
Castlevania is a little better about that.
Legend of Zelda? That's a confusing timeline. I just mean timelines in general.
Okay, I think that's a good topic,
But yeah, I've played Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, 358 over 2 days, Chain of Memories, not Re-Chain of Memories, which is a 3D, the 3D animated version.
Re: Chain of Memories?
I read it as Re, but like kind of like Reply, like in a chain of emails.
Yeah.
I played Coded. I haven't played Birth by Sleep because I didn't have a PSP at the time that it came out. Mm. And there were some cool exclusive PSP games.
Oh, yeah.
But
there were.
You know, very low selling console. I didn't really see the need in having one. So, yeah, I'm just excited to get the opportunity to play all of these games.
Yep.
And that means I don't have to buy 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue on day one because I'm going to save that till after I beat all these games in a row.
There you go.
And I know Kingdom Hearts does not hold up. I know. You don't have to tell me.
I can imagine. I mean, I don't know. I can imagine that it does. I'm not gonna rain your parade. So I'm glad you're getting this collection. I'm sure a lot of listeners, and also people on Facebook. Kingdom Hearts has its fan base and it's big, so
they're fun games.
Yeah. Moving on to something else that Square Enix is heavily marketing now is the most recent trailer for Final Fantasy 15, which is called the Omen trailer. Basically, what we've seen is Noctis. Well, I think it's Noctis, right? Yeah.
Who's the main? The whole movie where they mentioned his name.
Remember that movie? I forget. There's a lot of names.
King's Glaive.
He was. Yeah, we see that on display here. But basically, it's kind of showing Noctis and particularly like action, like nightmarish segments. I guess. I mean, they're basically CGI cutscenes similar to the movie King's Glaive, which you should definitely listen to that review. Maybe not see the movie, but listen to our review. I think it looked fine. It reminds me of the movie in terms of how the characters move and how the action seems to be paced. I thought it interesting that Noctis's father, I think King Lucian, I think that's his name.
Who cares?
He is not voiced by Sean Bean in this. That's the thing. His voice actor is not the same. I was like, oh, I was kind of disappointed for that. I thought Sean Bean was actually going to... They actually got the actors.
That's an expensive get.
And yes, it is. And the other... The girl, I don't remember her name, Princess Lafitte.
Dude, I...
Yeah.
I don't know.
The girl who's in the movie, who's a princess, I think, Lena Headey is not voicing her either. So it's like, oh, come on. You get all the big actors for the film, but not for the video game? It's kind of disappointing.
What about Paul Greengrass? No, Aaron Paul.
You're close, yes. You got Paul in there. Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't even know if he's in the game.
I don't remember who the main character in King's Glaive is.
It's Aaron Paul.
I keep thinking his name is Nyx.
Nox.
Oh, I thought it was Lynx.
You're close. There's an X in there.
Yeah, I knew there was an X.
But I mean, what do you think of the trailer?
Square Enix is great at animation.
Yeah.
I've heard that Final Fantasy 15 is not bad.
I've heard very positive things. Yeah. They've been Square Enix has basically given this 15-hour preview of the game to press, and so far press has been pretty positive about it. I'm not the biggest fan of previewing games because I think that, and we'll get into that in a second, that kind of sets expectations at weird levels that can kind of overhype certain things, and that can even hurt and negatively impact games. Like, I remember one of the biggest preview things was for Wolfenstein The New Order, and how the press has said, this game isn't good, it's not paced well, the AI isn't good, the level design is bad, and it was like from 1 hour, and it was during this one prison section of the game, and Wolfenstein was actually pretty good. And the game came out, and it was great. And now, moving on to another game, for something like Evolve, which was previewed at multiple game shows and conferences, and how the press was just loving it because they spent all this extended time playing it. Then, of course, when the game finally came out, it turned out to be a pretty lackluster and content-free product. And so, yeah, now before we move on to the last three, which I think is, again, kind of carries into it, anything else in regards to Final Fantasy 15 that, I mean, are you excited for the game? Does this at least... Hearing maybe from the preview and maybe seeing the marketing, has it changed your opinion of, do you want to play it?
Basically? Maybe it's the fact that we've talked about it so much over the course of the past few months.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the fact that I'm still high off that Kingdom Hearts news, or the fact that I weirdly love weird Japanese haircuts and a lot of black. But I am interested in the game now.
Yeah.
But I think I've told you this. I'm going to play every Final Fantasy now. I've decided that I'm going to start at 1, and we're going to see how this goes.
See, I would start with 4 or 5.
I will probably get to 14 and give up.
You'll give up by, I think, 10. 10 is the, what the fuck happened? I think 10 is awful. I know, I'm in the minority in that among a lot of people, but... continuing on from that, support for Evolve has ended. Despite an initial huge bump in players following a shift to a free-to-play model this summer, multiplayer shooter Evolve will no longer be supported by its developer, effective immediately. However, the game's servers will remain online for the foreseeable future. The news comes via an emotional blog post by Turtle Rock Studios co-founder Chris Ashton, in the post titled, "Our Final Message to Our Evolve Community." He made it clear that Turtle Rock does not own Evolve, and it was not the developer's choice to end work on the game at this point. This is the life of a AAA game developers who aren't self-funded and down on their own IP. Eschen wrote, we don't get to make the call. We all know that going in, but we will sign the dotted line because we love what we do. We're happy to have gotten the opportunity to do something risky, something new and innovative. Evolve was published by 2K Games, which was also involved in the attempt to make the game work as a free-to-play title, particularly on PC. That was not released for consoles. Eschen says, Turtle Rock was hoping to continue work on the game in the form of Evolve Stage 2 and revise the name for the free-to-play version. The developer planned to bring Stage 2 to consoles, like I just said, in the near future, but it looks like that's just not meant to be. As a thank you to the game's dedicated community, Turtle Rock will be holding one final Evolve-themed live stream on the game's official Twitch channel. That live stream will begin at 12 p.m. Pacific time on Thursday, October 27th, which is today. If you're listening, technically that's when we're recording this. Eschen also notes that while Evolve is done, Turtle Rock itself is not. He says the director has lots of stuff in the works that we hope you'll enjoy. Evolve first released in early 2015 to fairly positive critical reception and some fan support. However, it struggled to build a large, consistent fan base, especially as players were turned off by the huge amount of expensive downloadable content. So, again, much like, this was a game that had been previewed so much, like over the course of the year, like in 2014 and eventually into 2015 by press. You know, I mean, it was a victim of overhyped and a victim of overselling what was actually on the disc. And the other thing that hurt this game, as I mentioned, was the ridiculous DLC plan. Do you need to buy all that stuff? Do you need to? No, but it's like stuff like that probably should have been in the base game because it was all released day one, a lot of that shit. So, I mean, John, did you ever play Evolve, and what do you think of this news in general?
I remember, I think I played like an open beta before it came out.
Same.
And I didn't want to play it anymore.
Yeah, I don't like 4v1 multiplayer.
Yeah, I think it's weird because it's not fun to play alone, really, I guess.
Yeah, you need
to know you're fighting against a team.
Yeah.
And I know there are a lot of instances where you could just instantly lose in like 2 minutes.
Yep.
And that's just a bad balancing job. And so, why would you want to play a limited, poorly balanced multiplayer?
Yeah, it's pretty. I never want like a game developer to fail.
No, and
like
I'm actually really happy to see that they get the opportunity now
continue
to move
on
again.
I mean,
they tried something new, and I think
didn't pan out.
Yeah, it didn't, but they got the opportunity to try something new and different, and I think that might inspire other developers to try something like that, maybe execute it a little better with better support. And I think that downloadable element kind of killed this vibe.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, since then we've moved on a little from that.
Yeah.
Unless it's season passes or
I think it's had multiple season passes.
We've had this sort of sense where this is how much extra you can give or, you know, ask for, and that's it. And I think we kind of understand that now, unless you're a GTA Online or a Destiny, those kind of anomalies coming from huge developers. But, you know, it's hopefully they inspire new people and hopefully they get to try, you know, something new again.
Yeah.
I think that'd be interesting.
No, I'm glad Activision just didn't shutter them because I was afraid. Because, you know, Turtle Rock, people don't know, they're actually developers of Left 4 Dead. Everyone likes to say Valve created Left 4 Dead. No, it was Turtle Rock Studios. You know, Valve was the publisher in that case. Valve eventually went on and made Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah.
Turtle
Rock, given the opportunity, try some new and interesting ways.
They did.
I love
Left 4 Dead. Love it. It was great. We'll never see a third game in
series. Oh, no. We'll never see a third anything from Valve.
Yeah, it's so disappointing. But speaking of horror games, we have a number of horror games that we're a big fan of. Right, John?
Bye.
think the most terrifying thing tonight that I've seen is the cat shit in Chris's kitchen, because the cat just took a dump, and I'm like, God damn it, and my foot was right next to it, and I jumped. It was terrifying. You know, they got the litter box right there. You can do it. It's clean. It's relatively clean in there. Come on.
They just, like, in the background of this, they're just, like, off on the other side of the house, and they make noise, and it scares me.
John is so spooked, because we occasionally record at
and the
Chris's
door's
house.
Always unlocked, so like I think I hear the door open, and it's like I know they're not supposed to be here yet.
It's the perfect setting for our Halloween.
I love how
episode.
You dimmed all the lights except for that one.
Yeah, except the one. No, I want to get in that nice mood lighting, nice scary mood lighting. No, we're together, we're alone together, John. It'll be nice. It'll be fun.
Stop it.
So that's even more terrifying than the cats. But yes, welcome back. Yeah, we're here to talk about just the horror genre in video games and kind of what we appreciate about it, and seeing how like the genre has kind of split it into different subgenres over the years, and just how it's evolved kind of in the last really the last 10 years, I'd say. The horror genre, I think, is starting to come back in a big way, because there was a period of time when the horror genre seemed to be all but extinct. Like the big franchises, like the Resident Evil and Silent Hill, like those are kind of the two people. Like, oh, when you think of horror games, particularly like 10 years ago, those are the ones everyone's like, oh, these are the best. But like now, I mean, Resident Evil might be on its way to comeback, but that franchise has just become such an action game. And with Silent Hill, the series has just progressively gotten worse and worse, to the point where Konami's like, we don't know what the fuck to do with it. But I think the genre has finally started to recover, and again, really splintered in all these like really fascinating directions. I mean, John, do you kind of share the same opinion that I have with the horror genre? And do you think that the genre itself is starting to become something that we all kind of want it to be?
It's definitely evolved, and I think it kind of mirrors what maybe horror and film is.
Mm-hmm.
A chance for, I think, young upstart developers to really try something new. And I think you can see that happening today with stuff like Outlast,
mm-hmm.
and these walking sort of experiences. And I think horror video games are really tailored to this new generation of walking sims and, experiences. We got it with like PT and these weird, it's just experimentation is key. And I think also I've noticed that the game doesn't necessarily have to be a horror game to be terrifying. It's all about atmosphere. You can get some horrifying elements in BioShock. BioShock is not
absolutely
a horror game in the slice. Like
it borrows from the genre.
Huh?
It borrows from the genre.
Yeah, it borrows, but it's just like a typical shooter.
Yeah.
And also something like, I think I mentioned last week, Gone Home.
Mm-hmm.
No way in hell is that a horror game.
Yeah.
But it really sets a mood. And I think that's when I really love the genre, is when it's all about mood. Mm-hmm. The same way in which I love, like, my favorite horror film, Halloween, it's nothing I find about that film is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Except sometimes it does still unsettle me because of mood,
mm-hmm.
and darkness and just this playing with light. And I think you do get a lot more interesting. Horror games are the most interesting genre, because they do a lot of different things, because they're trying to mess with you.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, you're right. It has definitely splintered off into there's action horror, and there's these walking simulators, and there's this kind of psychological horror if you're thinking about games that kind of mess with you, like Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem, like that.
Long title.
Yeah, it's a long title. But yeah, I also love to think about how the genre has progressed,
mm-hmm.
from the OG Resident Evil. That franchise alone has progressed a lot and continues to evolve. I think that,
or devolve, depending on who you're talking to.
We'll see with 7. We'll see with 7. Clock Tower, the original Alone in the Dark, or even something like the Friday the 13th video game, which
4v1 or whatever.
Yeah,
multiplayer.
But the original one on the
NES, yeah, that one.
That is
when you're
super
chasing,
complicated,
killing teenagers.
Yeah, not easy to figure out.
Yeah.
I think it's a very interesting genre, and I just love to. I just really wanted to talk about it around spook times.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think that there are some particular games that really exemplify what the genre is. And it particularly falls into like several subgenres. And just to get into like one particular game that recently that I think shows where we at with like survival, like pure first person survival horror, is Alien Isolation. Now, the people that don't know, Alien Isolation was a first-person survival horror game developed by Creative Assembly, who are best known for developing the Total War strategy game series, so really out of their wheelhouse completely. And really, it's set in the Alien film franchise universe, where it takes place in between Alien and Aliens, and it follows Ellen Ripley's daughter, Amanda Ripley, who's trying to like learn about, like investigate like the disappearance of her mother 15 years ago. And of course, the game kind of progresses where you're contacted by Weyland-Yutani, who, as we all know, are the best and most honest company in the world. They basically tell her, we might actually know what happened to your mother. We've discovered the flight recorder, the Nostromo, and you basically go to the space station where the flight recorder is being kept. And as expected, all hell breaks loose because you learn that an alien is actually on board. And in much the same way that, like, with, like, Outlast and Amnesia, and, like, with PT most recently, is that Alien Isolation is all about not fighting against the enemy, but running away from it. About hiding. About realizing that no matter what you do, you won't be able to defeat it, defeat whatever you might be fighting, based on, like, you don't really particularly even use many weapons, even though there are points where you do have weapons in the game. It's actually better not to use them at all, because that endangers you throughout the entire campaign. And what I like about Alien Isolation is the AI design, particularly in regards to the alien and how it learns based on your previous gameplay choices, specifically how you react in the environment. If you particularly hide in a certain, like these kind of like mechanical, not mechanical, like a metal cabinet or whatever.
Like a locker.
A locker, exactly. Thank you. It'll know to check those because it realizes you've hidden those before because you've run away from me. You know, I realize that you're in there. And again, it kind of plays with just how, like, it pretty much is an evolution of what we've seen from games like Outlast and, like, Amnesia, where it's just about pure survival. And what the Alien franchise, what Isolation does best is, other than that kind of that survival gameplay mechanic, is atmosphere and lighting and sound. And my God, they nail, and aesthetic. I mean, it is exactly like the 1979 film to a T. There's nothing about it that feels like it doesn't fit within that game. So, I mean, that's what I particularly appreciate about Alien Isolation. I mean, John, have you ever played Isolation?
No, but it is on sale for $12 yep. on the one right now. And I'm
spectacular.
I'm really chomping at the bit for it.
It's well worth, I think, picking up because, one, it's incredibly respectful of the Alien franchise more than any of the, you know, the past 20 years of films have been. My only criticism of it really is that I think this is a criticism of a lot of games like Isolation is pacing, where there are particular segments in the game which probably don't need to be there. And it brings up a larger point, and I think a criticism of this particular subgenre of survival horror is that you don't necessarily need a long survival horror game for it to be good. I think actually, if it's too long, it actually hurts it because it takes away the atmosphere, it takes away the scares, because then you become bored. And where I think, in particular with this type of survival horror subgenre, that these types of games should be shorter. They should be kind of like an 8-hour experience at most. You know, or, you know, nothing longer than that. And I think that's where, again, when you're just lurking through the halls and you know you hear the alien around you, you know it's searching for you, it's hiding through the vents and you can just hear it scuttling around. It's so done so well. And that's repeated in other games, like particularly with Outlast, which I hopefully that we can review. It plays with that, with the idea of these, where you can't fight back against these enemies. You have to either use the environment at your disposal to fight them in certain ways, basically to evade them, or to hide. And I love the fact that this subgenre has just started to proliferate across many games. Apparently, it's even going to be a major part of Resident Evil 7, from what we've seen, at least from footage, which I really like.
Yeah, I think this particular type of horror game are the ones I enjoyed the most, mm-hmm. or the ones that scare me the most in a different sense. So yeah. When I think about games that really terrified me recently, some that kind of pop into mind are Dead Space, which is sort of like,
which we'll get into.
it's sort of like, it does have a lot of flashy scares, and it's like, oh, I jump.
Yeah.
but there's ones like Slender, which are more psychological in the sense, I think, and I keep having to compare this with film because that's my most experience with mm-hmm. horror elements, but my favorite horror films are like Halloween and It Follows. And I think where those two tie directly into the type of games that I like, because it is always one physical entity that you can see.
Exactly.
So the alien in Alien Isolation, the Slender Man in Slender, mm-hmm. you can see them and you understand that those are what are hurting you.
Mm-hmm.
But you can only really run away.
Yep.
And you can do things to where you elongate your time or you block their path.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can stop them, but it's always a temporary stop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just me and my style, that is what like gets to me. It's this fight that you'll fight forever and always lose at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that
you delay the failure.
You just, that's all you're doing is you put all your effort only to delay something.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
it's this feeling, probably like this sense of like fate, where it's always inevitable,
mm-hmm.
or this like maybe fear of, not even fear of death, but fear of that end point, because you understand that it's going to come at some point.
Exactly.
So yeah, there's probably like a whole bunch of psychological things that go in there, but those are my favorite types of experiences, horror in and out of games.
Agreed. One of the things that I actually found interesting while playing Alien Isolation and games like this is that I can only play these games for maybe an hour maximum, because I feel constantly vulnerable. Even when I'm just playing the game, I feel vulnerable and just like anxious, which maybe you can criticize the game for that, but at the same time, that's the point. But yeah, I have to put the game down for like however many hours after I play, because it's like, okay, I finally got from under the one bed in this particular room to the other one. I got to save the game. I'm done. All right. I got to move on. I got to play something happy. And so I think this particular subgenre does that where no other part of really horror has been able to achieve to that extent, where I need to put this down because I just feel so incredibly anxious and worried about what might happen the next turn.
I think that's why I'm usually very calm and stressful, but there are instances where I do just kind of get stressed out,
mm-hmm.
like, and very anxious about a particular thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's exactly what those kind of things, like, they give you a point to manifest on.
Yeah.
Like, everything else can be fine, but mm-hmm. that one thing is going to get you. And I think those experiences, they're the quieter ones.
Yeah.
But I think they're the most affecting, because there's something to say about the power hidden within like a quiet moment,
mm-hmm.
Compared to something that is loud and flashy.
Yeah.
Not to say there's anything wrong with like mm-hmm. the action horror genre. I think those are the most fun to play when it comes to gameplay.
And we can get right into that. I mean, probably to me, the game that best exemplifies the action horror genre, the one that where it involves a lot of combat, but still remains atmospheric and scary and has, you know, all the hallmarks of what you expect from a horror game, is the original Dead Space. Now, if people don't know,
excellent game,
which is to me, I think the best horror game of the last generation on consoles.
Definitely took me by surprise.
Yeah, of course it was. It's published by EA and developed by EA Redwood Shores. Eventually, they turned into Visceral Games, which of course they went on to make the other Dead Space titles and a number of Battlefield games. But really, it follows. It takes place in like the 26th century, where you are part of this engineering team sent to investigate this, basically repair this spaceship called the USG Ishimura. The USG Ishimura is this planet cracking spaceship. Basically, it's a mining ship. It harvests like moons and asteroids and planets, even, and then gets all the valuable minerals. You go there and you play this character named Isaac Clarke. Who is an engineer.
And quiet protagonist.
Yes, he is the definition of a silent protagonist, because he doesn't say anything. Although in the latter games he does eventually get a voice actor. But
let's not talk
about this. No. Well, okay, maybe we might. But basically you land on the USG Ishimura quite spectacularly. And of course you soon discover that the entire ship has been overrun by these basically zombie creatures or whatever, like that, they're like infected or whatever. And, very, very similar to like John Carpenter's The Thing in terms of design, where they seem to be like an amalgamation of like humans, and they have multiple limbs and body parts and all kinds of gooey things. It's very, very terrifying. And What I like about Dead Space, not just because it's incredibly atmospheric and is some of the best sound design, I think, of any horror game ever.
Sound design is key, I think.
It is. But what this game does so differently other horror games does is in terms of combat, and where it's not about getting that headshot that Resident Evil has just kind of baked into our brains, like, I got to constantly shoot the enemy in the head. It's like, no. In this, you have to shoot the limbs to kill all these enemies in order to stop their progress towards you to kill you. And I really appreciated about Dead Space, where not only was it able, again, to create one of the most atmospheric horror games of last generation, but to just turn its head on combat than what we've learned for really arguably like 10 years with a lot of horror games. I mean, what's been your experience with the first Dead Space game? What to you kind of stands out about it?
Everyone talks about Resident Evil 4. Like, yes. That is kind of like one of the best horror games of all time. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think Dead Space is better.
Oh yeah.
Dead Space is Resident Evil 4 refined, but with a wonderful twist on that kind of formula. Mm-hmm. With the, is it called the cutter? Is it just called
plasma cutter?
Plasma cutter. Yep. That is a brilliant,
one of the best weapons in video games.
Yes. And it goes in with this sort of body horror vibe that the game puts off with the enemies.
Yeah.
And I think that's why they're terrifying. It goes into the whole, I think we mentioned it with Gears as well. Gears is kind of goes into it a little bit.
Yeah. It has some horror elements.
Yeah. In terms of but yeah. The just malleability of the body and just messing with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game really leans into that with its weapon. And I think it just adds a nice new element and tactic and way to play. The problem with zombie games in a sense is the fact that there is kind of one point that you hit, that you have to hit that point. Everything else kind of feels useless.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Dead Space, every hit can be a killer hit, but it can never be the hit necessarily.
Right, right.
It evens out the sort of distribution of your hits as long as you're thinking strategically.
Yeah, I mean, you could take, and that's the fun thing about the zombie creatures, which are called necromorphs. Like, you can take out their legs, but they'll still come after you.
Yeah.
Because they have legs grow out of their back and they'll start coming at you, these giant pincers and things like that. Or the little, like, arms that come out of their bellies and things. I mean, yeah, I mean, how it kind of, It subverts your expectations and what you think. Like, even like when you shoot off their limbs, they might evolve into something else, which again is what I love about Dead Space, because it is a total homage to John Carpenter's The Thing. It exemplifies what body horror is. It is the fear of your body rejecting yourself, you know? The fact that your body would fight against you. And to me, that has always terrified me. The idea that some type of, even like you see that in Alien, even where your body's an incubator for this other organism and it's feeding off of you and eventually you give birth. And similar to like Dead Space, your body's an incubator for this weird, like alien, it's like an alien plague or sometimes tied to some type of like ancient religion. It just plays up all these different things and how what you do to your what you do to the human body and just how creepy and just terrifying it can be, and particularly in this type of setting and in a super sci-fi futuristic setting like this.
Oh, so, definitely. But yeah. Then EA likes to run things into the
so game. That's the thing with Dead Space is that, I mean, the first game I think is well regarded as one of the best kind of sci-fi horror games of all time. Certainly, I think the best horror game of on the Xbox 360 and the PS3 last generation. Now, the series continued on with Dead Space 2, which I think is a great game. I do think it's a great game. I kind of consider it to be the Aliens of the Dead Space franchise, where it's a little more action-based. You're introduced to a lot of more human characters, where in the first Dead Space, even though there are human characters in that game,
or so you think.
Or so you think, exactly. You only meet them sporadically. Whereas in 2, you interact with a lot of these characters a lot more, and they kind of start to explore more of the mythology of the necromorphs, and more so of Unitology, which is the religion, which is based on like this ancient alien religion. They all kind of tie together. It gets a little muddled. But with Dead Space 2, I think, despite it being more of an action game, I still think it works. It still retains the core of the horror, and it also introduces, kind of plays more with the idea of, are you seeing what you think you actually are seeing, where it plays with like visions and certain like enemy encounters and things like that, which I think it works for the most part. I mean, what was your experience with Dead Space?
I love the way it opens. It is a really like, crazy opening. I think as you're explaining it, how it goes a little bit into the lore, I think that's always kind of what is bad.
It can get dangerous.
With sequels.
Yeah.
Because I guess I have to, again, bring up Halloween. It's going to happen a lot because that's what I associate with horror. With any horror film, as you bust open the mythology, you take away from the mystery and the power of the thing you're scared of.
Mm-hmm.
At least for me. And I feel like most people would think that. So for some reason, when I showed my girlfriend Halloween last weekend, she was like, oh, I want to know more about Michael Myers. And I was like, why?
Yeah, he's the Shape.
You just like leave him as the Shape. I barely need to know his name. Like, he's just a bad guy.
Exactly.
So like when you talk about like we find out why these things are happening, mm-hmm. you find out why, then you can kind of – you're one step closer to figuring out how to stop it.
Yeah.
You're figuring out a way to ground it into – a force that can be beaten. And so the great thing about Dead Space was it's just so your efforts just seem very futile.
Yeah.
Your efforts turn into saving someone and then realize, oh, that
guy's fucked.
Yeah. Like that didn't happen. You like keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And then, and I think Dead Space does probably what you said, you know, what you just said Dead Space 2 does with it, the mind thing, mm-hmm. but it does it without you knowing it.
Yeah, exactly. It plays with it.
Until the end. And mm-hmm. I think that is what... I think that is more terrifying because it pulls the player into it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what I was doing wasn't real. Not like, I just didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
And when... In like Dead Space 2, it's more apparent. So that it kind of can take you out of it. It's a different element because you are interacting with it. So mm-hmm. to be more aware of your manipulation kind of makes a more of a disconnect. And then there's Dead Space 3, which is like not a thing.
Now with Dead Space 3, this is where we kind of start getting to the problems of the horror genre and how publishers can kind of influence the direction of what the original vision of the developer was. With Dead Space 3, it really stopped being a horror game. It had horror-type enemies mm-hmm. and, like, puzzles, but really it became an action game.
Yeah, you know what's terrifying? To have a co-op partner.
Exactly. I was about to get that. They introduced a co-op partner, who I forget his name, Carver, I think he was. It doesn't matter. But it's so funny because I remember when the original Dead Space came out in 2008, and then Resident Evil 5 came out in 2009. One of the biggest criticisms of 5 was the fact that you had a co-op partner. And it's like, everyone looked at Dead Space, like, look at Dead Space. It showed that being alone is more terrifying. But then Dead Space made the mistake that Capcom did, that the Resident Evil did. And yeah, it took away the horror. And yes, you can play the game by yourself. You don't need to, although it works really weird where, and all these like cutscenes that, like, even though you're alone, your co-op partner suddenly shows up and it's like, that's pretty crazy, huh? It's like, you weren't here like for half the 30 minutes I was killing necromorphs. What the hell happened? And yeah, and the other problem that the game has is that it introduces a terrible love triangle story. It just doesn't work at all, and it feels so awkward, and clearly the writer's just, it's like, don't do that, guys. Like, if you want to have a love story, fine, but you have to do it better than what you gave us. With 3, it's simply just not that scary, and it was just repeating, it felt like 2 taken to the next level, where, no, it's just about the action, it's just about the mythology now, we're really getting into it, and honestly, the mythology was like, the less I knew, the better, because I'm like, it doesn't make any fucking sense, and also introduces human enemies that you have to who shoot at you and fight against you, and even necromorphs who shoot at you with, like, guns, it's like, what is going on?
Why?
Yeah, it sucks, and it's a shame, too, because clearly, like, again, their influence for 3 was the thing, because it took place on a planet that was completely covered in snow, very much like the thing. I'm thinking, oh, this will be great, but it just didn't work. Although I will say, the marketing was great because they had Phil Collins playing what the fuck's a Phil Collins song? Do 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 do. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh Lord, see that?
Wait, why though?
Yeah, that trailer for the game is awesome.
Okay.
Best trailers ever. But yeah, I think with Dead Space, play the original game. To me, it is the perfect action survival, like, third person shooter of the horror genre, I think, ever. And just to kind of to move on to something which I think is starting to really show promise is the idea that really has been popularized by Telltale, which is the kind of the adventure horror game, which we have seen in the past. There have been different versions of that. But the one that I think has proven how effective that formula can be is with Until Dawn, which people don't know. Until Dawn was a horror adventure game developed by Supermassive Games, which is a relatively unknown studio. And it's an exclusive for the PlayStation 4. Originally, Until Dawn was supposed to be a PlayStation 3 Move game. But then when Sony went, this Move shit's not working out very well, is it? And so that thing went dormant for years. And for people who don't know Until Dawn, I mean, there might be a reason for that, because Sony did next to nothing when it came to marketing this game. Like, they almost wanted to hide it. Like, the one game that they were promoting that year, I think in 2014, or no, excuse me, I think, yeah, it came out 14, was...
Is that Infamous First Light?
No, it was the... Or maybe it was 2015, I can't remember off the top of my head. But it was the Werewolf game, or whatever the fuck it was.
Order
1886, which sucks.
I didn't know there was a Werewolf game.
Yeah, you fight, like, four werewolves in it.
But four? Dang.
But, like, all the marketing budget clearly went to that game instead of Until Dawn, which was clearly such an amazing horror experience, and where it, based on kind of like the Telltale formula, where it's kind of choice based, where you play like multiple characters, and it's kind of set in Western Canada, which is cool. You know, how many games take place in Canada? And it centers around like a group of like eight teenagers who decide to vacation in a night in a cabin in the fictional Blackwood Mountains. It's a total like kind of 90s slasher film, and it kind of. It's kind of like set up that way throughout the game until that there's a great twist. It's like, oh my god, it's not that at all.
Don't ruin it for me.
I won't ruin it for you. I won't ruin it. But it's like it kind of plays of multiple horror genres in such a unique way. But what I liked about it is that it shows what Telltale clearly needs to do is that you can make a beautiful. I mean, this
you can improve their engine.
You can improve their engine. A beautiful choice based game that incorporates kind of all the hallmarks of what we've seen in a lot of fun slasher films. Where I think Until Dawn, it has its scary moments, but I think it's important for a game like Until Dawn to exist to say we can also have fun with the horror genre. It can be funny. It can be kind of goofy. It can be corny to a certain extent, but also have those really terrifying moments. And I mean, for me, what makes Until Dawn such a well worth experience is that you can play it multiple times, where you can do choices that you make throughout the entire game.
Decide who lives and dies.
Decide who lives and dies. And certain things that you think, oh, this is obvious that everyone's going to live. It's like, fuck, I only have two people that live in this playthrough. Basically, I thought I'm making all the right choices, because some of the right choices may not be the exact right choices. And
life.
Exactly. And also, I appreciate with Until Dawn, it kind of explores certain things that you don't often see in the horror genre, particularly, like, first of all, it's a game set in Canada, which is like, yeah. Is there anything scary there? But also, it fools around with, like, Native American mythology in regards to the Wendigo, and, like, certain things like that, and how, like, is there a supernatural thing going on? Is this, like, is this more like a slasher thing? Or is this more like a sci-fi thing? It's like, it's playing with all these different things, and certain things are just kind of thrown up in the air, and it's left to you to decide until like a certain key point in the game. But and also, yeah, Peter Stormare. And people don't know, Peter Stormare is like a character actor. He's probably best known for Fargo, where he played the crazy guy who was with Steve Buscemi. He plays a psychologist in the game. He constantly talks to you. He is incredible. It is Peter Stormare at his most Stormariest, because he is cheesy and crazy as hell. And so, yeah, I just think with Until Dawn, I hope, and based on what we've heard, is that this was a huge, not only a critical success, because it scored very well on a number of sites, but it was also a commercial success. And I'm hopeful that we'll get more, this franchise continues on, but more kind of choice-based horror experiences, because it's both a more kind of, it can be both relaxing and very tension-filled.
Yeah. One, I think it's very interesting that it didn't get marketed very much, because
they were hiding it.
Pain and Panettiere is in this. So was Mr. Robot.
Yeah, Rami Malek.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems kind of...
That was before they, you know, I mean, Rami Malek with Mr. Robot. Like, this came out before that. He blew up with that.
Yeah, but it just seems kind of strange that you get these celebrities, these TV and film actors, and you don't really push this game.
Yeah, because they weren't even featured in the marketing at
it
all.
It is such a new experience. Today, this would have been like a big focal point, because I think now the industry has realized we've done the shooting for 20 years. We've done the jumping and climbing for 20 years. We want cinematic experiences.
Yeah.
But it's that we've gotten, I think gaming has gotten to the point where we're no longer really trying to be movies because we found what kind of movies we are.
Yeah.
And we finally found that point that distinguishes us. We're close to what films are, but we've embraced that interactive element. Mm-hmm. And I think it, Until Dawn is a perfect example. I haven't gotten my own hands-on full playthrough, but I've sat with my old roommate. He had the game, and I watched him as he played a little bit of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just kind of like, this is a cool, like, movie. This is totally an awesome experience. And so it makes me appreciate Telltale even more because I've never considered what Telltale is doing as the end. Mm-hmm. I think they're just the pioneers of something that some other developer is going to take and really run with. And someone like Supermassive.
I think have done it better than Telltale.
Oh, no, because...
at least in terms of the way the game works.
Because you'll be hearing in a review for the recent Batman very soon. I'm done. I'm about done, bro, with that engine. And they need to fix they shit. Like, for real.
I ran into a number of technical issues with this, more so than in the beginning, I'd say, of this episode than any previous Batman episode.
It's bad.
Yeah.
But so when you compare that to something like Until Dawn, and it is the Uncharted version of a Telltale experience.
Technically, yes. Yeah. Graphics and technically.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of storytelling and characters, I still give it the Telltale. But continue on.
No, well, you also got to think, this is kind of going for that B-movie 80s schlock.
You're very...
And
that's
so,
a great point.
To a sense, it is exactly the kind of thing. What it needs to get to, the point, though, is, are these experiences going to be worth $60 to people? I don't really think so. The tech isn't there to where we could get it that cheap.
Yeah.
But... these are very much the early stages, but $60 is a lot for people who will think of it as an interactive movie. I think $20, $30 is fine, but $60 is a big ask, especially for people who might not be heavy video gamers.
Yeah. I mean, this, you could probably complete Until Dawn, probably 7 hours, I'd say. Like, if you want to thoroughly explore, like, the environments, maybe 8. Because there's a lot of, there's collectibles and they kind of add certain things to the story. They actually implement a really cool mechanic where you basically can see the future and how what choice you might make might lead to this type of event. Hmm. And it, again, they play around with like different kind of mythology and things like that, but you know, Native American mythology and things, but it's a really cool mechanic. It's like, shit, maybe it's like, say a character is burned to death and you know that the next like couple of minutes you need to get something that involves fire. It's like, fuck, well, what do I do? So it kind of plays with your expectations.
It's sort of like the, That's So Raven.
Yeah. Yeah, very much. It actually does. Oh, you're right, because even the flash forward, flashback actually has that same, oh, what did I just see? That Raven, you know, whatever the hell her name is. Yeah, yeah. That's funny.
It's a good show.
Now, but for price, I think, you know.
It's a tough discussion to have.
For me, I thought it was worth it. I bought this game relatively a lot cheaper than a lot of people. I paid $20 for that. I'm like, this is worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I feel like had I paid $60, the experience that I got, here's the thing, like the horror genre in terms of like this type of movie, like this 90s Scream-esque type of film, they're gone. They don't exist anymore. Killed it. But even then, that game, well, here's the thing.
And those are anomalies.
Those are anomalies. And that movie performed so below expectations in terms of money. It was a commercial, it was a critical success, but a commercial failure. And we don't get those types of films anymore. And I appreciate that Until Dawn gave me that, and basically an 8-hour version of that movie where even, and I never felt it's like you think, oh, God, an 8-hour slasher film. I never felt its length. I was constantly engaged because they keep changing certain things in terms of like gameplay mechanics and introducing new horror elements to it, which you previously didn't expect. And so, I mean, I felt that it was worth, had I paid $60, I think it would have been worth that.
Well, I think you also bring up what you said kind of, I think, comes to my point. You brought up the fact that Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Critical success. Mm-hmm. Kind of commercial.
Because no one knew about it. Yeah,
no one knew about it, and, you know.
It's on a shelf for 2 years.
Which, by the way, I watched it again at the Rolling Road Show for Alamo. Mm-hmm. I've been just trying to show my girlfriend the best, my favorite horror film.
Good man right there.
Still holds the fuck up. Oh, it's so good.
It's going to hold up for years.
But I think that example goes to show that games like Until Dawn have to find a way to lower that barrier of entry. Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't necessarily appeal. That has to try and appeal to also a more mainstream audience, and I think it could.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's such a high bar to try and surpass. Because there are, like, games that can give me 80 hours of multiplayer that, or hardcore RPGs that come out at $60, and it's like, I just won't play. But those kind of walking experiences, initially I was, you know, to start off, I was like, $10, that's what I'm going to pay. Now I'll pay $20, $30 for something I know is going to be a really good experience where I don't necessarily interact that much. Because what, we're paying like $25 for a Telltale game now.
Yeah.
And one, that necessarily isn't great. So, like, I think
there's... $5 for episode.
I think there's a sweet spot to something like Until Dawn. And I understand that it's kind of hard to get there now because of the tech. But
this was expensive to make. You gotta
Yeah.
This is beautiful. The graphics, it's probably one of the PS4's most beautiful games.
Dude, the tech is gonna get there one day where this is just easy.
Yeah.
But something I want to bring up, one last thing as we're wrapping up.
Yeah.
And it ties heavily into tech, but it's really about the future of horror games.
Yeah.
VR. And where do you really think the horror genre is gonna go? Because I think now, right now, is such a pivotal turning point for the horror video game genre, because it's now a pivotal point for these sort of new experiences. And I think horror, we've seen it a lot where I think horror games kind of, horror games and films, they're where a lot of experimentation can go, because I don't know, it's just people who are really into horror, no offense, I don't think it's an offensive thing, but people who really love horror are typically end up being sort of the, like, outside thinkers, the weirdos, air quotes, you know? One of my my old editor, the one who got me into, like, film in general and gave me this opportunity, why I'm here today. She was a big horror fan, and I think we've had that discussion while discussing The Host about it's the outsiders. This is why this genre exists, because it's people who think differently. And I think this extra element of VR and new way of playing games is going to unlock so much in the horror genre.
No, I agree. I think VR, I think just VR is the perfect place for horror to continue to evolve and to exist. I think it's really, I mean, I don't really particularly want to play, like, an action game on a one. I don't, I mean, I can go into my hole. Like, even though I don't like wearing stuff on my face, like, I'll ignore that for now. But I don't think I would want to play, like, an action game with a VR headset, because it would be almost too hectic. Like, if, like, a first-person shooter. Like, say I play Call of Duty on a VR headset. That'd be, like, too much at once. Like, all around me. But with a horror game, it feels, it's a little, the better ones are a little more slower paced. They don't rely so much on moving so fast all the time, and it would be, I would be able to take in the atmosphere and the environment that the developer had created for me. And so I think what we're really going to see, I think a test case is going to be Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
We'll see how successful that is. They're billing it as the first kind of big AAA horror VR experience. But I would actually be interested to see something that maybe is... Maybe not like a big big recognizable franchise on a VR, but, you know, like a big horror franchise, but something completely new. Maybe take a attack from, like, Until Dawn and have it be more narrative based. Where I love to walk around and just interact with other characters and kind of go up to them and like physically be able to turn to them. I think that'd be kind of cool, a little slower pace. They get to know, like, certain people. I think that's a cool thing about VR, like, to have more of a personal interaction in a horror game.
Yeah, I don't really think that moment's going to come from Resident Evil 7.
No, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying.
I think this is going to be another example of the indies. They're going to really come up, step up to the plate, and knock it out of the park. Mm-hmm. I bring up Gone Home again, which is not a horror game, but really has these sort of unsettling elements.
Right.
You come to... Is Outlast the big developer?
Outlast is... the developer for Outlast is Red Barrel. Red Barrels, yeah.
Like a mid-range, small.
They're, they've
gotten bigger.
Yeah, they're bigger now. But, yeah, I mean, they're kind of, I think they're, I mean, not to, no offense, they're kind of like a B developer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Soma.
Mid-budget, they're mid-budget.
Soma's another one I know a little bit of.
That'd be perfect for VR.
In Layer, things like, or Layers of Fear.
Layers of Fear, that'd be perfect for VR.
I think that's where, like, again, a lot of the experimentation is coming. You start with a cheap budget, those constraints really force you to think outside the box. And I think that's where the best kind of experimentation comes from. And mix that with this element of complete immersion.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of you cannot escape. And you are alone.
Oh my God.
And it's just thinking about it is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's exciting to see, like, once this tech goes down and it becomes more accessible to other people, we're going to hit a sweet spot where we've unlocked Pandora's box. And it's filled with goblins and ghouls and evil demons.
No, I completely agree. And that's the one part of VR that I'm actually particularly excited for is you know, just horror experiences on VR. I think that'd be great. Just kind of to wrap things up. And what do you think horror games people definitely need to check out, despite whether it being like currently on this generation of consoles or on PC or even decades ago? What do you think people need to play in order to get like a true horror video game experience?
I think it's Dead Space.
Yeah.
I think Dead Space hits the perfect mark. It may not be the most horrifying for people. It's not the most experimental like we've been talking about, but it is the most accessible. It is the most fun to play from the rip.
Yeah.
It is, if I want to get my friend who just plays Call of Duty to understand that, no, games don't just have to be shooty for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
They can trigger different parts of your emotions.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what Dead Space does. And from there, from the person like being like, oh, okay, I kind of like this tension, this slowdownness, this story elements. Well, like that's when you start introducing them to the Outlasts,
mm-hmm.
the Until Dawns, the Gone Homes, those ones that focus on slowing things down. And I think it's the perfect middle point.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think definitely the first Dead Space game, it kind of gives you everything you want. It has that great gameplay. It has that wonderful atmosphere. And especially if you're a fan of just like sci-fi horror films, this is the perfect game for you. I also encourage people to check out maybe something that maybe hasn't aged particularly well, but I think at the time was really, really cool, was a Condemned Criminal Origins,
mm-hmm.
which is a game that came, I think it might have been a launch title or a very early game on the 360.
I think it was a launch title.
I think that was great.
Month.
Yeah, exactly. I think that to me, it kind of felt like a prototype of something like maybe like Outlast, where even though you could kill enemies in that game and such, but there are moments where it plays with like great, just the way it plays with light and how you have like a flashlight and how certain things like pop out at you. It's a great jump scare game. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think you can get it for like a buck now on anything, so I think it's well worth it. For people who may want a more obtuse kind of experience, maybe it's like Silent Hill 2.
Yeah, I think I was just thinking, it's like we haven't really brought up Silent Hill yet.
I mean, Silent Hill, I think I'm not the biggest fan of those games. I appreciate them for the atmosphere, for their wonderful character design, particularly in 2 with Pyramid Head. And when your introduction to Pyramid Head, where he's basically having sex with these
mannequins,
weird game, very trippy place of like, just like, is this reality or is this something in my own head?
Manifestations of, it's a perfect example of these metaphors and manifestations for the kind of fears and guilt I think humans feel on a day-to-day basis.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It's a great way to wrap that up. Exactly. And then, of course, Until Dawn, if you want more of kind of a big kind of cinematic experience in terms of a horror game.
I think it's worth noting that if you do want to play the Silent Hill games, don't play the collection. Because I know I've heard a lot of things about that being buggy and jank and actually like worse than the original.
Yeah, and even the original games, they were kind of buggy and janky to a certain extent. But, I'm just trying to think if there's any other type of horror game that I think people should probably check out. I guess, Alien Isolation. Even though I think it has some pacing issues,
mm-hmm.
I think not only if you're a fan of the Alien franchise, but if you just want to be scared shitless and to prove, like, the Alien is finally terrifying again and he's not a joke, like it's been turned into in all these movies, definitely check out Alien Isolation.
And to wrap, I think, to tie it perfectly into how we ended the first segment, Left 4 Dead. I think there are a lot of scary elements of Left 4 Dead. That's also a very easily accessible game that still has these just like kind of terrifying moments. Because there's something about speed and zombies that freaks me the fuck out.
Because we'd be all dead. We would die, John. I mean,
I still attest that zombies can't climb ladders.
No, these can, man. Left 4 Dead zombies, they can climb ladders and they will get us. And that's, I would be dead. I can't run very fast. I can run. I can get like a good 20 feet, but then it's like, I'd be fucking done.
I'd just leave.
I love to sing about the moon and the June and the spring. I love to sing about a sky of blue or a T42, anything with a swing or two. And I love you. I love what you sing.